Welcome to Cast Service. My name is Christian Corley. With me is James McLean. And thank you, everyone, for listening over the past few weeks and taking the time to respond to some of our inane ramblings through the Facebook page. That's very reassuring and gratifying that we are talking to, that you are still there, dear listener, basically. If you weren't aware of this, we have a Facebook page. It is at facebook.com/thecasturbus, because, you know, there are many other Casturbuses these days, it would seem, but we are the definite article, and which, strangely enough, is kind of what we were talking about last week, the definitive Doctor Who, wasn't it, James?
It was, yes.
And we came up with kind of, I suppose, two answers to the question of who is the definitive Doctor Who. We had one each, and I think mine was probably traditional. Yours was not, but on the other hand, I think the arguments of both are very compelling. You can still listen to that, of course, either on the casturbus.co.uk website, over on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, whatever. We had a lot of people responding to this on Facebook, which took me by surprise. Lots of interesting ideas. One, you know, we've got William Hartnell. Alan Cadwallander says William Hartnell was considered to him as definitive. Then he thought no one could top Christopher Eccleston, but David Tennant did. Michael Murden, William Hartnell was the first for me and will always be the definitive Doctor. Russell Isles says John Pertwee. Martin Simpson, John Pertwee and Tom Baker. I suppose by definition you can't have two, though, can you really? It has definitive... By implication, is singular, isn't it?
Yeah. I suppose you could have definitive in particular for particular questions.
Yes, I suppose. Yeah.
So you could have two definitives for two different attributes.
Yeah. It's interesting. A lot of this is William Hartnell, Tom Baker, and John Pertwee, and David Tennant. And Christopher Eccleston, those are the most popular names that have been raised. There's one or two, say Sylvester McCoy or Patrick Troughton. Who's this one here? Christopher T. Roberts says, I always liked Richard E. Grant, which is interesting. Chloe Jane Devereaux says Peter Cushing. There's a couple of mentions of Peter Cushing. It's quite interesting, isn't it, how we all view it slightly differently.
I just wonder whether we look at what the definition of definitive really means, and whether that sometimes, and I could be wrong, is being interpreted as the best, which, I mean, I could say that David Tennant is the best Doctor since 2005, but is he an example of what I would consider the definitive Doctor? Because something that's definitive doesn't necessarily mean it's the personal best. Yeah. I think it depends on, again, what you're defining as. Good example, as I said last week, I my favorite, I think, deep down, is Sylvester McCoy for various reasons. Do I think he is the definitive Doctor? No, I don't think he is. I think he's almost a counter question to what the definitive Doctor is. But he's not the definitive.
The anti-Doctor, nearly.
I think he is to some degree, isn't he? And certainly the New Adventure books play with that. As we've said before, in the Room with No Doors book, which is about his previous selves incarcerating him in a box for his crimes against who he is. Some might say the War Doctor, if they like the audio series, is their favourite, John Hurt. But you couldn't say he's the definitive Doctor. Although I suppose some may argue... On a subtext, he is, because despite all this, he is a doctor under trial, but he is still maintaining who that quintessentially is. So yeah, it's a difficult question, but I think William Hartnell is a difficult one for me, because surely that suggests that all the rest are not. That if he makes it the definitive Doctors, and the rest are just facsimiles or poor facsimiles of that, I don't like that.
No, it's not the case either, is it, really? So
I don't think so. I don't think that's the case. So I couldn't. I think he's the one I would be hard pushed to say is definitive.
Yeah.
I mean, again, if you do it from an actor's perspective, say Matt Smith wouldn't say he was the definitive Doctor by my justification. So his definitive doctor might be someone somewhat earlier, because it might be someone that he's drawn influence from, and from an acting perspective has decided that for his projection of the doctor, that source makes that version definitive. Like Peter Davison always said Patrick Troughton, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Was a major source. So for him, surely the most definitive is Patrick Troughton, rather than most people would say Tom Baker. So
maybe another view of definitive is the one that appears to be the most influential as well, which is got to be between, but it's probably not any of the 80s doctors.
But then also my argument for Matt Smith last week would be destroyed by that, because he's too recent.
Yeah.
So we would again be looking at Patrick Troughton maybe, or Tom Baker. Mm. That would steer towards probably Tom Baker being the definitive doctor.
It is tricky. Just on the matter of that conversation, I was reminded, thanks to our listener Andrew Brooke, of a book, The Lost Adventures of James Bond, Timothy Dalton's third and fourth Bond films, James Bond Jr. and other unmade or forgotten 007 projects, which came out in 2020. And obviously, there's good reasons for getting everything about 2020. And I forgot about this book, which I've now added to my wish list, which Andrew Brooke shared, because I think we mentioned Bonds, didn't we, briefly? And reviving old Bonds and stuff like that. So thank you for sharing that. And I will be getting a hold of that book soon, because I really wanted to get it back in the day. And, I was probably distracted with a lockdown ending or starting again or something like that. I don't know. Some Doctor Who news to have a look at. And I think we'll start with Sophie Aldred. SFX has shared a, at the time, exclusive first look image from The Power of the Doctor, this time showing Sophie Aldred as Ace in her iconic, there's that word again, jacket. And there's a full feature on the story in SFX, the current issue of SFX, which is on sale now. We've both had a look at this photo, haven't we? And it is, it has some nostalgia value to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
She's got the backpack as well.
Backpack, baseball bat, coat. Yeah, I liked it. I mean, isn't this the sort of celebration is all about? He's revisiting those moments, and I think it would have been a shame to have her totally step away from that. I mean, if you brought Tom Baker back, you'd have to have the scarf. But obviously, they brought Tom Baker back and did something entirely different, which was really good. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it for that, I think. I'm looking forward to it more so, and we've talked about this before, more so than Tegan, which again is not anything against the character, but because the character kind of had an outro.
Yeah.
Had an out, even if that was a very brutal and quick exit, and one that would leave audiences thinking, well, what happened to her after that? You know, Ace didn't get any of that, not in the television anyway. So I'm really looking forward to having some closure, I think, for Ace, some official closure, in the same way that it was great to have that official closure for McGann. That's quite exciting.
Yeah.
But yeah, saying that is interesting with Tegan, isn't it? Because I suppose there is an argument that with Ace has had what, and we've talked about this before, 3 to 4 different outs of Doctor Who in multimedia. In the comics, the character died. In the New Adventures books, she left, didn't she? She left and then came back and
came back,
went
older
to Paris. Is there another one? Am I missing one?
I don't think there's another.
Oh, maybe it's just two.
She died in the comics. Did you say
she died in the comics? Yeah.
And she's still going in the audios, isn't she?
And she's still going in the audios. So, in a sense, Tegan hasn't had as much of that coverage. I mean, obviously, she's been in Big Finish, recently-ish. She's had a run in Big Finish. But I don't recall her having so much focus in the books, book runs. I'm sure someone can correct me on that. So I think it's kind of nice, I suppose, for her, because while we did get an out for her, it was an out which left questions, wasn't it? It wasn't like a Joe Grant out, which was fairly nailed down. She's going to have a lovely married life. it was just a person going, I can't deal with this show anymore, I'm off. And it's like, but where did you go off to? Did you go straight to Heathrow and, you know, become a stewardess? Or did you, I don't know, what happened really to you? Do they mention Tegan in the Sarah Jane Adventures, in that, you know, that little monologue that Sladen has in Death of the Doctor?
I did watch that reasonably recently, and I honestly can't remember.
I can't remember either. I mean, obviously, Ace is mentioned, which becomes the foundations to what Sophie Aldred's book was about, and also the DVD extra, the charitable foundation. But point with my one little finger on a keyboard, just seeing if something comes up, because we could wait for... There we go, yes. She says that campaigning for Aboriginal rights is what is said in Death to
the Doctor. Right.
Yes. So we do have a little idea what she might have been doing, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to give anything away from this magazine article. It's starts on page 90 of SFX. There's some nice photos, most of which you probably have seen already, listener. There is a quote from... Janet Fielding, nobody wants a chilled out Tegan. She's there to kick against the pricks. Maybe not necessarily an exact clue as to what's going to happen, but regardless, it's a nice quote. So that's in SFX. So, I mean, if you're passing W.H. Smith anytime soon, that's there for you to pop in and have a browse through. I don't think there's particularly much. Oh, there's a little interview with Sacha Darwin as well. So, SFX, nice photo of Sophie Aldred there. Now, another thing that's probably worth talking about, because it also puts things in their place, perhaps, maybe not, who knows, David Tennant has denied that he's the next Doctor. Now, obviously we know that Shudigata is the next Doctor, but and that's pretty much what he said, Shudigata will be the next Doctor, and that's about as much as I'm prepared to say. It doesn't really explain. I mean, he's not going to explain anything, but there was a speculation that she would regenerate into David Tennant in the conclusion of The Power of the Doctor. Yeah. But now that seems otherwise,
what I said. I am almost, I'm 80% sure this is going to be the Half Doctor.
The Half Doctor.
Sure. The half human, half doctor. Well, he's not. Yeah. He is. Yeah, he's half doctor, half something else. Half Donna, in theory. So I reckon that's, because that just makes sense. It just means that you can have him aged. He can have his own police box, as we've seen. It gives him a reason to be there, since Donna's in the story too. And you don't end up messing with the main continuity of Shooty. That's my feeling. That's the only thing that makes sense, or an alternative timeline doctor or something. But I don't think, I think given that we know that Davis had so much prepared on that front for the half human doctor for, you know, so much in 2009, I'm sure that this is in a way of kind of tying up that loose end as well for him.
I guess two things on that. Number one,
are you now going to prove me wrong?
You've let me
ammo through that with uttermost confidence to now pull me apart at the end with a fact.
Only because there's two things. Okay, one thing.
Okay,
Rusty Davies has been perhaps linked with Doctor Who on numerous occasions over the past few years, and there was often a plan, or there was a plan at some point, mid-2000s, of Tennant returning as the other universe Doctor. So I'm kind of underlining, I'm reinforcing you there. But Russell T Davies previously said, a mysteriously forgotten excursion for the TARDIS in between Planet of the Yudin Sontaran stratagem, or maybe a multiverse thing. They're all the rage these days. Maybe this is the Doctor and Donna from Universe 557 all set to collide with our own. Then again, maybe, just maybe, this return is so impossible that it's actually an intricate illusion created by an old enemy of the Doctor's. Maybe that's as simple as it is.
Yeah, I don't think he'll do that. I think he's too much for a producer to know that you don't pep up audience expectations and then to make it a facsimile. I think he knows that that will just not, that will not be chewed and swallowed well. So I agree with him. Yes, maybe he's done something in the middle of a timeline. He's brought them out, or maybe it's a multiverse thing, which again, the half human doctor is a multiverse thing, really, bubbled maybe, but it's a separate universe in itself. I think he's trying to, I still think I'm right. Okay. I think I'm right. Cause it just feels, it just sits so easily where you don't have to explain much at all. You don't have to particularly explain. The only thing against it, sorry, the only thing against it I can think of is that it would require a recap that goes back over 10 years. That might be the only reason I could see him turn around and going, actually, it'd just be easier to do a multi-doctor, do a multiverse doctor, because then we can just say it's a multiverse doctor. I don't have to explain that once upon a time, Donna the Doctor manifested a separate doctor who went to live in another universe with Rose. That just might be just too much. But then he's got Donna there, so he's already pulling on those past strings. So I suppose the other argument would be if you brought him back, you'd be demanding, people might be thinking, well, where's Piper? We want Billy Piper there as well. So maybe there are some things against my idea. Maybe it's good for me to fortify a good back step away from it, just in case I'm wrong, and to look not too foolish to sort of say, maybe I'm wrong now, even though I think I'm probably right.
Okay.
Yes, that'll work. Yes. They won't see through that, the fools.
So you're definitely right.
Well, definitely is a bit like definitively. You can see it from different angles, from the past and the future and the present. And at the present, I am definitely right. Would I be definitely right in the past, you know, when the question didn't exist? Probably not. But then I couldn't be wrong either. In the future, well, we'll see. Maybe in the future, it'll be just a matter of asking my dear friend Christian to go back to this podcast and just edit out a few little bits if I'm wrong. We all we'd be doing is changing history in a very minor way.
Or we could just leave it as it is.
Yeah, that'd be the cruel thing to do, Christian. I'm not sure I'm on board with that. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I think they're right. I think the bottom line is this isn't part of degeneration. It's not connected to that main thread. It will be something which comes at a tangent and then can go away at a tangent without it impacting. I think the question will be, is Shooty involved in this? Is there a break? Is this like a story which sits outside of what's going on? That could be interesting. It could, I don't know. That could be weird.
Okay. Back in 2014, we discussed on the podcast, it was myself and you and Gareth Kavanagh, we discussed the idea of American Doctor Who's. There's a list on the once notorious, but most people tend to ignore it these days, BuzzFeed, about... what if Doctor Who had been American? And I think there's an attached video that it was sort of linked to or something like that. And I can't spell for some reason. So I'm going to stop trying to spell that. Basically, we had a discussion about this. And now there's this idea that has been floated, thanks to Peter Capaldi, that Tom Hanks could have been cast as another incarnation of the Doctor. He spoke to the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast. I don't know what that is. In which it turned out Peter Capaldi lobbied Doctor Who producers, David Moffat, etc., to cast Tom Hanks as a different incarnation of the Doctor, to which he said, that would have been a blast, but that's all scheduling, I guess, can't do every job. And honestly, me as Doctor Who, can you imagine the outrage? I'm an American, and I'm going to go over, and I'm going to jump in that, red telephone box, and either wear a scarf or whatever it is, so imagine the cry if I had played world famous. I would have played one of the Daleks, maybe. I would have been inside one of those big salt and pepper shakers talking in that automated voice, with an English accent, by the way. Says Tom Hanks. possibly without breathing. I don't know. can we see Tom Hanks as a doctor? I don't know. I mean, these maybe 5 years ago, not so much. These days, I mean, we seem to be in a world where anyone can play the doctor, don't we?
Well, this is because this is goes back to last week again, doesn't it? What we consider the definitive changes. You know, what is a definitive doctor shifts. As it shifts, you know, our perception of who can fit in that category shifts as well. I mean, for instance, Jodie Whittaker. Now you've had a female doctor, you can now be saying, well, what is definitive now shifts, and it opens up to a different gender, different representations or gender representations of the doctor. So it's not a static thing. So, you know, I mean, you can go back 30 years, go back to McCoy. And while there were mentions, you know, flippant mentions of Lenny Henry by the Mirror as to being the next doctor or whatever, you know, having a doctor who isn't white would be seen quite shocking. But thankfully now there doesn't seem to be much of that in the press coverage. You know, the doctor was always largely considered British and English, wasn't it? And I remember even with McCoy, there was a question about, you know, a very clearly Scottish doctor. So we do see these shifts. So I could say, I mean, even Davison, you know, Davison was a very young doctor. And even at the time, the press coverage of some people, you know, were concerned the doctor is this young man when he should be an old man. Tom Baker, you know, Tom Baker was considered, if you consider compared to Pertwee Troughton and Hartnell, maybe a little young and it just not doctory, because yeah, the idea of what is definitive is shifting. So yeah, Tom Hanks for me, I could see it. I think it'd be a very different portrayal. I mean, what is the doctor? I suppose the doctor in the end is something which is very smart and quite kind and anti-authoritarian. Is there anything else that really defines it? I don't think so. Is there, do you think? I mean, I don't think they have to be quirky. I don't think they have to be, you know, firing off zingers left, right and centre.
Yeah, they definitely don't need to be doing that.
And maybe they do that too much. So I could see Tom Hanks doing quite a gentle, you know, I'm thinking of his Mr. Roberts, you know, something very, you know, a gentle character could be quite good. Inhibit, you know, taking on those characteristics.
Just one last thing that you probably need to know about, dear listener. As we know, our listener lives everywhere and nowhere, and the listener who lives in Scotland might be keen to know that the Doctor Who Worlds of Wonder exhibition is moving from Liverpool to Edinburgh, and the current exhibition finishes today. We record. Oh no, beg your pardon. On the 6th of November, so a month today, and then from the 9th of December to May the 1st, it is going to be housed at the National Museum of Scotland on Chambers Street in Edinburgh. I've missed this. I didn't know this had actually. I think I was under the impression that this had been cancelled due to, you know, events over the past few years. So it's nice to see they actually went live. And to be honest, I'm more likely to go to Edinburgh than Liverpool. So no offence, Liverpudlians. It's just easy to get to from here. That's all. That's moving to Edinburgh. It looks kind of cool. So, and they have a few free events at the Liverpool one, so presumably they'll take some of that with them to Edinburgh as well. I'm impressed by how fast they're actually going to do it in a month. They're going to unpack and then reset it up at a new venue. That's quite good going, actually. That's pretty impressive. So that's happening. Good. Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
When was the last time you went to a Doctor Who thing?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Might have gone to the Blackpool exhibition. I can't think of anything more recent that was specifically about Doctor Who, a Doctor Who event.
Well, we were at a convention together, weren't we?
Oh, yeah, there was that. we did that, didn't we?
We did that.
That wasn't
yeah,
that long ago. Yeah,
it wasn't that 2018? That long ago. I think it was 2018. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
He's been a busy man, dear listener. I mean, that's the last thing I went to my knowledge. So, yeah. But I haven't forgotten about that.
That was not in my ballpark.
In fairness, I saw a photograph pop up on Google Photos the other day on my phone. I may have forgotten if I hadn't seen it quite recently. So, you know, it's, we shouldn't blame James for forgetting that event. It was quite... it was
nice.
Hey?
Forgetting you. Even when you said there was a convention, my brain was like... I remember we met one time and... you know, your family were there. That wasn't a convention. We didn't go. I just totally forgot about Fort Thorpe. It was just not there.
That was 2018. Mm. Yeah, yeah. So that was 4 years ago when we did that live podcast.
Yeah, that was an interesting event. Lots of technical hitches.
Yeah, a lot of technical hitches. Yeah, nightmarish in some ways. In fact. I would say,
yeah, it was. I don't mean there's any rudeness. I don't have some areas of it were nightmares. I just don't even look to remember running a panel which was meant to be three people talking about TARDIS's three producers down to poor Philip Hinchcliffe, who just. You know, was just out of his depth in really engaging on the topic as a producer, and then having all the technical issues on top.
Yeah, that was tough.
Technical issue that could happen.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's. I did think about this the other day. Wondering if there's any chance of trying to recover the audio from that, but we'll see what happens anyway.
Oh God, no, I don't know. God.
It may happen.
It didn't work. And then the PowerPoint they had was an older version, so it just my newer version of the slides just collapsed into a black hole. So it was just on the screen. Yeah, that was bad. But the podcast we did there was fun. That was good. And the interviews we did later were good.
Yeah, I didn't know about that, about the PowerPoint not being the right version, because of course you can use. You don't need it to be the right version. There's a website. You just go to office.com and view your PowerPoint.
We just didn't. I'm not even sure it was web connected though.
Ah, well.
I don't know. So I brought the PowerPoint along.
Yeah.
Plugged it into the machine, which was locked away initially, so we couldn't get it on. And then it came on, and it was just like a crushed, sort of like nucleus of my material in a space in front of all this audience who were patiently watching everything go wrong.
If you were there,
we could have done.
If you were there, dear listener, I would just like to just emphasise that a few weeks beforehand, I went to the venue along with other people involved, Gareth Cavanagh, a few other organisers, and areas were demarcated and some of it was changed and whatever, but there was no clue whatsoever that there would not be connectivity or that microphones and speakers would not be available. They were very much, you know... We were told very much in no certain terms that yes, you can use a mic, you can connect them up to our amplification, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, PA. There shouldn't be any issues like this. And unfortunately, in some cases, such as James's chat with Philip Hinchcliffe, it didn't work out like that.
That's the nature of these things. You know, they're big beasts, they're very hard to manage. And when one thing goes wrong, it starts to spiral because, Gareth would have been there. I think Gareth was around when I started it, but he had to be called away because there was another issue that he had to go and deal with. So there was no one there to help me with the technical issues while they were firefighting somewhere else. So that creates a fire and it all goes out of control with all the best intentions.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those unfortunate, difficult things, you know, running those sort of conventions. It's difficult and takes a lot of skill and luck. But yeah, oh well. But as I say, we got some good stuff out of it.
Yeah, we did. And we also had our chats with Graham Harper.
Yeah.
That was good.
That was cool.
And who else was there? There was Stephen Gallagher?
Was it Stephen, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And
it was a good old... and Philip Martin as well. He's probably no longer with us, but it was good. I enjoyed it. I'm just trying to work out when exactly it was. It looks like it was September 2018. Over 4 years ago. We have this vague idea of having a look at some of our old podcasts. So I was surprised that didn't come up in my research back into the past of Castorbus, or the podcast with a K. And the reason it didn't pop, because I was just sticking to this month, and that's why I was surprised not to have seen it, and why I wasn't entirely certain when it happened. But that's why. Do you remember? And we said we weren't going to do this, but I am going to do this slightly. Okay. Do you remember that time William Shatner went on breakfast television a few years ago from some sort of event in... It was on a set, a replica set of the Enterprise.
Right.
Do you remember this?
We
did talk about it in the show. And in fact, we talked about it in such a way that I decided it was worth... releasing as a separate 5-minute podcast in which we discussed whether William Shatner really did act like a dick on breakfast television. It was a funny... I mean, I have a big issue with breakfast television in that it always... I said always is probably a very strong word. It invariably appears that very lightweight interviewers are given the job, the task of... interviewing people that they're really not equipped to deal with. So you don't get, you know, you're not getting Andrew Neil, Andrew Marr sort of levels of interrogation off your breakfast television people, are you? Because people don't necessarily want that time of day either. John Humphrey's on the radio, that used to be sort of a little bit later in the morning as well. So William Shatner appeared on breakfast TV on Good Morning Britain in 2016, and he was on a phone because there was some reason why the mics wasn't working or anything like that. That probably upset him a bit. And then he was getting some inane questions from the usual inane presenters. I think he handled it quite well in hindsight, because he gets all that stuff a lot, doesn't he?
I just don't remember really any of it. It's like in memory.
I can't remember.
This is a problem with this segment. This segment means that I'm not going to remember anything that we've done.
We'd have to rename it. We renamed the segment. We haven't given the segment yet. It was going to be called... What was it going to be called? The podcast from the past or something?
No, it was a better name than that.
On this podcast in history. Yeah, that was it. It was on this podcast in history. And I was going to do like a big echoey jingly voice. On this podcast in history. But based on this was only 6 years ago. Maybe we should be calling it James's Early Onset.
That's mean.
Yes, it was mean. I'm sorry. But yes, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. James has been a very busy man over the past few years, bettering himself and gaining qualifications and stuff like that. And this sort of stuff, this is trivial nonsense. So
I never remember this stuff. I just have a very bad working memory. So it's not just a working memory, a long-term memory as well.
Yeah. Old Shatner there, yeah. You can listen to that. It's only 5 minutes long. I'm not talking to you, James. I'm not the listener. Just go and listen to that.
You think you might be talking to me as well. I think I might need to listen to it. I do vaguely remember I don't remember the conversation. I could not tell you what I said, but I do remember the bit.
On breakfast TV.
But that's always kind of cool for me, because it means that I'll revisit stuff and it'll be relatively fresh. Just wish my memory was a little more worse when it came to watching TV shows. It'd be great to just be able to rewatch them again with the same freshness.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, I find that as well. It really irritates me. I've accidentally been watching old episodes of Men Behaving Badly lately, and it turns out I thought I remembered all of them, which is why I've stayed away from it. But it turns out, and it, partly because I got most of them on video, but it turns out that the last few I haven't got to yet, but I only watched them at the time, so I've never rewatched the last three or four. And the second half of series 3 of Men Behaving Badly, I never owned on VHS. So we've been watching them with almost completely new eyes, because I have no memory of watching them previously. And it's been really nice. It's like having a missing episode, basically, of Men Behaving Badly. And I know it's very silly and boorish and not very, it's very of its time. It's maybe not hugely appropriate by 2020's sensibilities. On the other hand, it's hilarious all the way through, which most current sitcoms don't seem to be able to manage.
So, old man out.
Well, no, come on. There's a job for situation comedies, and that is to make people laugh. And, yeah. You know,
well, that's if it makes you laugh.
Something like Not Going Out has a joke every sort of 30 seconds or something like that. I think it's there's a kind of an American sensibility to it. Mrs. Brown's Boys is a bit sort of panto-ish, isn't it? And then, and I am very keen on sitcoms with, I'm not saying I don't watch sitcoms with no laugh track, because I do, but I do prefer the atmosphere of being part of an audience that isn't there, you know, but, you know, you feel like it's there. So that's what I look for in a sitcom usually. I know there are funny things. I like Ghosts, for example, and there's no there's no live audience watching Ghosts, but Ghosts is very, very good. The thing is, I just find that the laughter encourages laughter. Laughter begets laughter. I wonder how funny I would think Ghosts is if I was watching it with virtual audience, as it were, you know? Would I find it even funnier? Would I think it was funnier than One Foot in the Grave or Fawlty Towers if it had an audience watching it?
Do you enjoy the laugh track?
Well, they're not tracks, are they? They are laughter that have been shown, that audience picks. The audience is recorded laughing, which is why I was going to refer to Stephen Moffat and Chalk there. There's a podcast called Sitcom Geeks in which they interviewed Stephen Moffat some years ago, and he talks about Chalk, which was hugely well received by the studio audience, and then when it went out at whatever time it was, 9:30 on a Thursday, it bombed, and no one to this day really knows why, exactly why. But yeah, I do feel more comfortable because it has that sort of, I mean, it comes from the old age of comedy and music hall, and that there are intricate links and like the live audience going out to watch the comedy, isn't it? It comes from that, and there's a feeling of liveness about it if you're watching the sitcom with an audience track. So, yeah, I like it. It feels nice. But, you know, we watch Modern Family and often end up in stitches. But again, how funny would I then feel it was if there was an audience laughing along with me? So it's all very difficult. I mean, you know, I could quite easily go out and watch a show, a comedy show, and have an audience laughing along with me, I suppose. You know, I'm not averse to that. I've seen Spamalot twice. So, the first one was better than the second one, though. The first one was the second cast in London. So it had Alan Dale. Alan Dale.
Oh, yeah.
Jim Robinson himself. Alan Dale, Torchwood. Alan Dale. He's been in everything, hasn't he, Alan Dale? As well as Neighbours. Yeah, he was in it. And, oh, the Hannah Waddingham. I think that's her name, Waddingham. Very tall, blonde actress. She was the Lady of the Lake. She was in Game of Thrones, in series 6 of Game of Thrones. She was the tall lady who was part of the religious sect who stripped Cersei down and paraded her in the street. Yeah. She's a very attractive lady. And then the second time I saw Spamalot, the Alan Dale was playing the king. And the second time I saw Spamalot was a touring version. Phil Jupitus was playing the king. Didn't really carry the same level of entertainment, that version, unfortunately. Hmm. But there you go. But yeah, I like Spamalot. So, remember him badly. Missing episodes. And just out of interest, just to carry on this vague idea of a future feature that we're probably not going to do now, it is several years. Where is it? 2013? The missing episodes event that we sent Gareth Cavanagh to. That was in October 2013, when, Fraser Hines was there and the late Deborah Watling. And that's when they recovered the missing episodes of The Enemy of the World and The Web of Fear. And there hasn't really been very much since, has there? So, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, there's still often you hear little whispers, don't you?
There is this ongoing rumour that the people in the UK have missing episodes and they refuse to share them, or they don't want to deal with the BBC or whatever. And you've got this idea also that some of the episodes have been found, but they're in such a bad condition that they've been locked away until the technology exists that they can be reconstituted in some way, I suppose. But I don't know. It's it's somewhat concerning. And I suppose, I mean, they've brought the animations to a close, haven't they, as well? So there is a kind of like a missing area. There's like missing episodes now, because now you've got the missing episodes, and now you've got the missing animations of the missing episodes. Which isn't great.
How will we cope?
How will we cope? Well, with the new Doctor Who, I suppose.
Yep, we still not got a date for that, or have we got a date for it?
No, I don't think we have got a date for it yet. But it's this month, so we're going to have the date in the next week or so, I should think. The Doctor Who Companion reports that it's probably going to be on Sunday the 23rd of October as part of the BBC's centenary celebration. So if that happens, that happens, I guess. And we will be talking about it when it comes around. That brings us to the end of this week's show. If you have any feedback, or if you have any memories of the last time James and I met in 2018 and everything that went right, preferably, do let us know. Until then, it is goodbye.
Goodbye. It's good, isn't it?